Welcome back to Inquire, the Investor Relations podcast. Our first series is in conversation with senior investor relations professionals in the UK.
Welcome back to another episode of Inquire, the Investor Relations podcast. As part of our first series of conversations with senior IR professionals in the UK, I'm delighted to be joined today by Rob Gurner. Rob's a highly experienced head of investor relations. He's currently head of IR for Plus 500, a global fintech company, and he's previously held senior IR roles at Inmarsat, Dentsu, Longmin, and G4S. Rob also sits on the conference committee of the IR Society in the UK. Welcome, Rob, and thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Jeff. Nice to be here.
Well, why don't we kick off, Rob, by telling us a little about your journey and your IR career to date. How have you got to where you are now?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I started my career in the telco industry, actually, many years ago, late 90s. As the business, that sort of industry was deregulating. I've worked for a startup that got taken over a couple of times. It was a fun time to be in that industry, and basically started working in one of the PR departments of it, one of the companies that I was working for. Really enjoyed that and ended up writing to about 100 financial PR companies in I think it was 1997, 98, and then managed to get a job at one of those, Gavin Anderson, which is, I think is now called CREAB. Was there for a year or so, then moved to Financial Dynamics, which is now FDI. And I think I worked in the support services sector on about 10 different clients at that point, and realised that actually I'd be quite interested in working in a sort of an in-house role. And then I moved into IR at that point, about 2006, for G4S, quite a junior role. Was there for a year or so, a year and a half, and then moved to the mining sector with Longmin, a platinum mining business. Ended up as head of IR there, really enjoyed it. Fended off a hostile bid from a company called Xstrata at that point. Nothing to do with me, actually. The credit crunch helped repel them. But it was a great experience, and then ended up moving to a company called Aegis, which is a marketing and media agency, 7 years. And in halfway through that, they got taken over by an advertising agency group in Japan called Dentsu, Tokyo listed. And so the IR role changed a little bit, helping the Tokyo team to sort of westernize their IR communications and think about how to market to US and European investors. I also got involved with lots of non-IR work, like corporate development and strategy and M&A. Some actual commercial projects as well, which was a lot of fun. But I kind of missed the London listed environment. So went to Inmarsat in 2017, was there for 3 years, and they got taken over by a private equity consortium. And there seems to be a theme running through my career. Every company I work for either gets a takeover approach or gets taken over. I don't know what that means. But that was fun working for Inmarsat, working in the space industry. I really enjoyed that. Lots of interesting challenges and communications opportunities there. And working with the private equity team was during the ownership change. And my role was made redundant and I moved to Plus 500. As you already said, we're a fintech business, multi-asset fintech business based in Israel, but listed in London. And we're trying to sort of reposition ourselves in that regard. And joined right in the middle of lockdown April, May 2000. And no, it's really, really interesting, really fun role. So yeah, that's my career in about 2 minutes.
And Robert, an interesting thing there I'd like to pick up on is something that we've talked about in the past and we both have in common is coming into IR from financial PR, which I would say is a slightly unusual path in with most people, a lot more people coming through the sales side or with a financial qualification. Have you found that and what sort of advantages do you think that's given you or different perspectives that's given you compared to people who've come perhaps more from a financial background? And have you found that that lack of a sort of a financial qualification such as kind of being an impediment at all?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it seems to be a less well-trodden career path in recent years, actually. The profiles, I think, of IROs, you know, the last couple of years has changed quite dramatically since MiFID. It's, I would say, less people coming from financial PR, unlike you and I many years ago. And I think certainly what I really enjoyed about the PR side was the writing, the communications, the selling the story, if you like, to media and analysts. I was less inclined to deal with the media. I probably didn't enjoy it as much, but I really enjoyed dealing with the analysts around the numbers, around modeling, et cetera, forecasts. So I felt that was what I enjoyed, but I needed to certainly to bulk up my financial understanding and knowledge. When I was at Financial Dynamics, I did a two-year ACCA in financial management, covering everything from financial statements, risk management, commodities, et cetera. And that really helped me understand the basic understanding of financial analysis and financial statements, which I was to sort of, you learn on the job over the years when you're dealing with analysts and their models. But that was the one thing I felt that was missing from when I was working financial PR. But I kind of had a little bit of understanding and background of writing and dealing with, you know, selling stories, et cetera. So, yeah, I think if you come from that sort of world, you definitely somehow need to bulk up your financial knowledge. There's no doubt about it. And I think that that is extracurricular, if you like. It's not something you can just do on the job. It's something you really have to take courses in to do that.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. But I think there's an advantage of that. And anyone out there who's, who might be listening to this who's thinking, I haven't got that necessarily career as an analyst or anything else. And I think, as you say, that particularly in certain sectors, the art of storytelling, of being able to sit in front of an investor and articulate a story in a confident, coherent manner is almost as important in some respects as the numbers. So I think, you know, they go both go hand in hand. And I don't know what you think, but certainly I've seen over the years, you described to me by somebody once, as you have two areas of comfort zone. You have IR professionals who are super comfortable with the numbers, but some of them said to me, oh, but I don't go out and meet people. I don't go out and see anybody, and I don't really go and talk to anybody. And I think, well, how the hell can you do that? It's investor relations. And part of that job is building relationships with key people, not sitting behind a spreadsheet. And I guess the other end of that spectrum are people who go out there and purely focus on the talking of everything and actually don't have that grounding and don't want to look at analysts and probably aren't managing consensus properly and all those things. So I guess you're saying that you probably come back towards it and you're somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's right. It's a balance, isn't it? It's definitely a balance.
Yeah, absolutely. So what was it that in the first instance captured your imagination about investor relations to move away from financial PR? You said you didn't like talking to the media and you just thought institutional investors would give you a harder time and hedge funds would give you an easier time?
Not necessarily. But I think that what I found was that the depth of knowledge that you needed to deal with the analysts and the investors on the buy side was something that I really enjoyed, the focus that you had working in-house as opposed to an agency. I think when I joined G4S back in 2006, it was learning about an entire industry, the competitive dynamics, pricing, the various elements of an industry that which wouldn't get that deep focus and deep understanding of when you're working across a range of clients for an agency. And that's what I really enjoyed. And to this day, I really enjoy learning about new industries, new sectors, new environments, new markets, etc. And every role you have, you know, I've worked across different sectors and you're sort of parachuted in with zero knowledge on day one. And it's, I love the challenge of trying to come up to speed and become an expert over a period of time in that industry. That fundamentally is what I really enjoy about IR, is that learning, that constant learning. And I think it never stops. You're always learning, certainly every day in the job, you're learning something different about whether it's your company or the industry or about IR in general. I think also I do like a challenge, and most of the companies I've worked for, we've had challenges. Certainly at Plus, we've had, I think, I would say, perception issues around the way that the company is perceived within the investment community. And part of my mandate has been to try and develop that and change that over time. And as I said before, and you know, we are repositioning the business as a fintech business with a wider diversified focus across different products and geographies. And that's something that is going to take time. In Marsat, we had lots of different challenges around operational challenges. It's a very complex business. You know, the way that the satellite technology was used to actually generate revenue across different business units was something that was a story that is fairly complex, and trying to get that across in simple terms was a key challenge. And also, you know, fairly had some operational issues around investment in the short term for sort of long-term growth. Getting that, again, that story across was something that was a challenge. And at EGS and Dentsu, it was the challenge of trying to lift the lid on a business in Japan that was fairly low profile historically, and trying to help Western investors, UK and European investors, understand that business in a bit more detail. And so, yeah, a challenge is great, and it definitely keeps things interesting for sure.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point you make there, Rob, which is the fact that, you know, you've learned from many different industries or sectors you've worked in, but they've all had slightly different challenges. You've been exposed to different elements of an investor relations challenge, which comes up, different issues to manage there and come up with strategies to solve. And I know you and I are both involved with the Investor Relations Society, and one of the things it is doing is pushing investor relations as a profession. And I think there's been great strides made in recent years to build that as more of a profession. And what you're seeing, and what I think you're a great embodiment of this, is that the technical skills that you have from investor relations are transferable, and the things you learn, experience you go through, you can transfer those skills across sectors because you can learn about a new sector. Yeah. But the investor relations skills are harder to learn, arguably. I don't know if any thoughts on that.
Yeah, it's a great point, Jeff. And I think it's a very transferable skill. And I think the industry and you know, IRAs need to get more involved with areas outside their sort of comfort zone, if you like, in parallel areas where you can use that skill and insight from the investment community and the experience you have dealing with investors, understanding investment cases, the corporate narrative, etc. That can be easily utilized in other areas, whether it's M&A or corporate development or strategy or various operational initiatives and projects. For sure, I think that's definitely something that I think IRAs can do more, and it makes the job more interesting. I think you mentioned the IR Society. Give them a bit of a plug. I find with this society, I think the more you put in, the more you get out.
Yeah.
Certainly over the last two or three years, I know that you and I have been heavily involved with a number of different initiatives. The certificate and diploma of the last few years, I would say we talked about earlier about building up your knowledge. I think the diploma is a really good way of doing that. It effectively covers everything you need to know about investor relations, from various regulations, best practice, technologies, ways of dealing with investors, all those sorts of things is covered from the basic to the very detailed. And that's something I would definitely recommend people do if they want to build a career in IR. But also, I think getting involved with whether it's the mentoring scheme that they're running, the ambassador scheme, getting involved with some of the committees. And actually, it's a really good way to share ideas. If you've got some experience, share that experience with people that are coming into the industry, but also learning. Going back to what I was saying before, always learning. The best way to learn about best practice in the industry is to get involved with those things, because you meet and listen to and understand what other IROs are doing. So I think they play a really valuable part in the UK IR industry.
Yeah, and I think we even met through that, didn't we? Going back a couple of years now, we met through the Investor Relations Society, and both found, I think we were going through, companies were being taken over at that point in time.
Yeah,
we were
able to go and
exchange notes on a sort of off-the-record manner about, nothing price sensitive being exchanged, I should say, but just about techniques and strategies that were being deployed and how we were finding that. So that's a good example that both of us can point to.
Sure.
We've evolved the conversation nicely here into what I was going to ask you about, what the biggest challenge investor relations is facing today and in the future. And I think we've come to a good point to ask you that.
Well, I think the first thing to say to that is, and it's sort of covered it a little bit, but the biggest challenge, I think, in investor relations generally is things come up out of the blue when you least expect it at very short notice. And that is a challenge that is just part of the job. And it's always been part of the job and always will be. And again, it may not seem fun at the time, but it's great experience. So when things come out of the blue, whether it's an activist holder suddenly on your register, whether it's a corporate raider, whether it's a takeover situation, a hostile, or whatever it may be, short selling attack, whatever, those situations happen in our world, and it's always a challenge, but always interesting, and it's always something that you can put in your bank as experience and say that if it happens again, you're ready and you've been through it and you're prepared for it and you'll have a much better understanding of how to deal with it, the second, third time around if it happens again. So that fundamentally is a big challenge. I think ESG, and I'm sure we'll talk about it in a bit more detail later, but ESG obviously at the moment, that the whole industry is sort of tackling it at the moment. There's a plethora of disclosure and reporting frameworks and requirements. Lots of regulations coming through. There's obviously, most importantly, what the buy side want to get out of their investments from companies. And you've got ratings agencies as well, just the surveys and the various questionnaires that need to be filled in. And of course, every IRO has a different perspective or a starting point in terms of where they are on their own ESG journey. And everyone has different internal resources. So we're all coming from it from a completely different perspective, different standpoints. And you've got all these different dynamics moving around. And trying to grapple with all that is probably the biggest challenge at the moment. I think the other point I'd make is keeping on top of the technology. Certainly during lockdown, we've seen lots of new platforms coming through, or platforms that are existed that have really fast-tracked their development. So keeping on top of those, whether it's CRM or share register analytics or sort of simple just webcasting events, keeping on top of those has been a challenge. But because there are so many and there are so many good ones out there, picking the best ones is something that is a nice problem to have, but it's certainly something that I think is a new development over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. I think it's been a real change in terms of how many channels there are to communicate with investors. It's just grown so much these days with things like even the retail chat platforms you can use to very specifically target retail investors. You see people like Primary Bid coming along to open up access in transactions for retail investors. And there's a whole different ways to communicate now, and companies being more innovative, I guess, with the way they use their own website and other platforms themselves to communicate directly with investors. So I think that's a really, really interesting point, Rob, that technology will continue, I think, evolving. It's interesting you see that as well. It's a challenge. How do you assess which technology to use? And do you find when you move that internally to pitch it to your CEO or CFO, how open are they to trying something? Or are they still very much about the let's do it the tried and trusted way?
Being a technology company ourselves, and then the technology is effectively housed and managed and operated out of Israel by some extremely smart people that we have that run it. So actually, we come from it from a different perspective, actually, because we know technology very, very well. So we do actually a lot of it in-house. So our website, we're just actually upgrading the IR section of our website. We were doing it all internally, and having been very involved with that, the guys have done a fantastic job, and actually probably as good a job, if not better, than some of the potential agencies that I've worked with over the years, because they know what they're doing and they're on it. And they need a little bit of guidance from an IR perspective, but generally, they have been extremely strong in doing that. So actually, because our management have that understanding already, they are particularly picky about which external platforms to use. So
this could be a new business line for Plus500. you go to your tech developers and say, IR has been crying out for this. And maybe that's an opportunity for you there as you go forward, Rob.
Maybe, because I think if you look at our platform for customers, you know, obviously we're a trading platform effectively. So we're sort of, there are lots of similarities around some of the insights and analytics that we offer our customers. So yes, for sure, there's something that we're thinking about as well. So
keep an eye on that. I wanted to pick up something else you said a moment ago, actually, when you were talking about the difficult times and you get these unforeseen challenges. I want to move on to talk about leadership in IR, thinking relationships with the board. From personal experience, when you go through those sort of situations with short sellers or activists and all anything that was some serious issues to manage, it certainly elevates IR to the board. And I found it's really beneficial in that case. They have a pre-existing relationship with the board. I'm a big advocate of IR presenting the IR section to the board directly and not having the CFO or the CEO do that, because those relationships are really important. I don't know how you found that in your career and how much interaction you have with the board on a regular basis.
Yeah, no, generally, I totally agree, Jeff. And the more you can get in front of the board, the better. I think it's a real sort of two-way dialogue. I think a lot of it comes down to the trust that you have both with your, you know, whoever you're reporting to, most likely the CFO or CEO, and the board themselves. If you've got that trust and credibility, you'll have a much better opportunity to be able to present to the board. I think if your CFO or CEO doesn't trust you to do that, then you won't have that opportunity. So I think fundamentally, it's absolutely crucial that you attend. I mean, I go to 4, 5 or 6 board meetings a year, all different sort of dynamics. And as I said, part of it is to deliver the first-hand intelligence from the buy side, the sell side, the market. You're the eyes and ears of the market for the company. And feeding that back to the board, I think, is really, really important for them to understand directly what's going on. But also listening to conversations around, for example, use of capital and decisions and the rationale behind the balance of capital utilization is really important for you to understand, because once you're presenting the story to investors, in your mind, you've got the understanding of the board rationale for having that particular balance. So I think it's really important from that perspective. So I present to the board, I'm an observer. I was observing a board training session earlier this week. I've hosted sessions with our brokers. And actually, what's an interesting role that I've also tried to get involved with is actually sitting on the ESG committee, not as a committee member, but as an advisor. So myself and our head of our company secretary run the ESG approach for the business. And we sit on that ESG committee as advisors. And we're presenting to that ESG committee fairly regularly. And that has been a really interesting experience for me. I think it's hopefully helped the committee and the board overall. And I think that's something that I think a lot of IR people are doing now, but it's a really invaluable role. Yeah. Again, having the direct impact and access to the market and feeding that back to the committee, I think is really important. And you're drilling down to the various dynamics around ESG. So yeah, ultimately, it's a crucial relationship. And you've really got to ensure that you build your trust with the CFO to be able to say, they can say, we want you to present to the board and have that regular touch point.
No, I would agree completely. And does the head of IR role sit on the SMT or the senior management function within Plus500, or is it?
No, it doesn't actually, but I think that's partly to do with the fact that I'm basically the only person in the UK, and the management team are all based in Israel. And I think if I sat on the management team, it would be a lot slower meetings, because they'd all have to speak in English as opposed to the Brit. So that's part of the reason. Everywhere else I've been, I've generally been on the finance leadership team, Mossad and Dentsu, and that's probably about generally where it feels right for the IR to sit. But presenting to the executive team is a fairly regular occurrence.
I agree. And how do you think IR becomes viewed internally as a function that creates value, not just one that kind of sucks in resource and pushes information out to the market?
Yeah, that's a really, really interesting question. And I think I'm a big believer in banging the drum for IR internally. I think there's a number of different reasons to do so. I think fundamentally, there's the ownership perspective. So employees, wherever I've been, have generally owned shares in some form, whether it's through direct ownership or through LTIPs or through a share scheme or options or whatever it is. So there's always interest from an employee perspective in what's going on with the share price. Actually, one of the benefits of being virtual is I don't get tapped on the shoulder every day to say, you know, what's going on with the share price today? What have you done to our share price today?
It's going down, right?
Nobody's going down. Exactly. I remember making myself scarce when the share price collapsed.
we used to have what we called lunch and learn meetings at Ophelia, when you used to get everybody around and talk about their function. And listen, the tax people were very good and very likable individuals, but the tax function held a lunch and learn about tax. There were probably half a dozen people there. I decided to do one about investor relations in the UK because everybody had a vested interest. The room was packed. It was standing room only, and I was quite taken aback, to be honest with you. It's the same. I travel to Asia, and people would come because they were all shareholders and all had a vested interest. We're always really interested to talk to you.
Yeah, completely. And I had the same wherever I've been, is there is that interest. But also, I think people are interested in not just the share price, but actually what are investors thinking? And I used to do regular meetings with each operational management team of the various business units to say, for example, in aviation, these are the big things that you need to think about. And they love that perspective of thinking differently about the business, getting that external perspective. And also at some point, you'd be calling on them to perhaps get involved with a capital markets day or some sort of investor event. And when that happened, they already had a good understanding of the investment community, of the views on the business, and an understanding of share price dynamics, etc. So there's lots of reasons to do it. I think at Dentsu, I went a step further, actually got sell side analysts to come in and present to pitching teams. So in the advertising world, we have to have pitch to customers or clients all the time. So there were a number of times where I got sell side analysts to come in the automotive sector or the biotech sector, talk about a specific industry or company that we were pitching to, the pitching team, and give them a different and completely different perspective, an investment community perspective. I don't think you can get away with that anymore from a compliance perspective, but it's a good example of how IR can actually bring commercial value to a business as well. So there's lots of different reasons to do it, and there's lots of different ways you should do it or could get involved.
Exactly. I think that's a good point, isn't it? We're always asking people within the business to help us, particularly when it comes to annual reporting or something like that, mm-hmm. and heads of business units. And likewise, I used to find it's very useful that they would always say, what's the market think about, not just necessarily us, but these are the other opportunities they might be involved with, other companies they're partnering with, and just being able to feed little bits of information back around what the market was saying about bits of their business, which would be of real interest to them, was somewhere you could just give them a little bit of something back for all the time they take helping you when they've probably got a million and one things on their plate, as well as you trying to get the annual report done.
Yeah, exactly.
Good stuff. Looking back, you've been obviously in investor relations for a while now. So, how do you see investor relations evolved over the last sort of 5 years in particular? You mentioned MiFID II a moment ago. Clearly, that's been a big trigger for quite a lot of change probably in the last 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, MiFID II's has an impact. It came in early 18. And I think two big things really from what I can see are the first is more reliance on companies for information and detail and analysis about not just their own business, but also the competitive environment, the industry, et cetera. And a kind of a bypassing of the sales side a little bit. So that was the first thing. Certainly, and as we saw that before really MiFID was coming in, it's starting to happen anyway. And certainly today, there's much more reliance from the buy side on companies to give that information directly. And I think also byproduct of that is obviously the sell side has shrunk in terms of size. And we've seen the profile of IR people change. We talked earlier about the move from financial PR to IR. Definitely, I think over the last 3 or 4 years since MiFID, you've seen a change in composition of the IR community. And it's generally still from the investment community, but from different areas of the investment community, whether it's from broking or investment banking or the sales side or analysts. I've definitely seen more analysts move across to IR.
Yeah.
And overall, I think it's a good thing. The quality of IR has generally improved across the industry. There's a much more professional, financial focus, numbers focused approach. But again, not losing that sort of narrative and relationship building dynamic as well. So that's I could think, been the impact of MiFID, sort of those 2 points. I think overall, we've seen other big trends. Of course, COVID obviously has changed the way we meet and deal with investors. We talked about that before. I think you've seen the continued move from active to passive, and that's a continued rise of the quants. And it makes understanding and explaining share price performance, share price moves, increasingly difficult. And share price moves from the companies I've worked for over the last few years, as unexplained moves on a daily basis and can be fairly sharp moves on a daily basis, driven by that dynamic. And of course, the other impact of the passive move to passive is AGM voting and resolutions. So I certainly learned how to understand passive funds policies, how to engage with them, how to deal with them through whether it's shareholder consultation or AGM voting. I think also 2 or 3 other big things, private equity, I talked about before, both on the buy and sell side. So private equity actually buying listed entities, but also coming into the market through IPOs. And if you're an IRO, try and get experience of one or both of those two situations. And of course, you've seen more activists coming in, and there's different types of activists, from passive activists to more vocal activists. And generally, getting involved with an activist situation, I think, is a great experience. With hindsight, it's great experience, may not be at the time, but certainly with hindsight. And I think the other trend that's coming through, and we've seen this in the US much more than the UK, but I think it will come through in the UK in the coming years, is the rise of the power of private investors. I've definitely seen this at Plus, that there's many more channels for private investors to get involved with from an engagement perspective, but also from a communications perspective as well. And they have more of an impact on share prices than I think people realize. And that will continue to increase over time. So certainly don't ignore private investors at all. Try and engage with them as much as you can. And don't just focus on your institutional shareholders, would be my advice to people coming through. So yeah, those are the sort of the big things that I've seen certainly in the last few years.
And I think we touched on that private investor point earlier on. And I think, you know, it's one that certainly, and probably for the, I imagine the vast majority of your career is probably similar to mine, where you'd certainly respond to an incoming question from a private investor, but you wouldn't necessarily go out of your way to court them or communicate with them. But if they happen to come along and ask you something, you'd certainly give them the right of a reply and talk and communicate with them. And now I think we're definitely seeing, say, with the number of platforms out there, the number of different events, and maybe lockdown has helped with this as well, because it's meant that people could do much more online and using technology. But you definitely, I think, see across our client base, we see it as a core part of any investor relations strategy, no matter how large or small the company. And that's certainly been an evolution in my thinking. It's what I've learned a lot in the last 18 months. And is that something you proactively look to build into your IR strategy then at Plus 500?
Yeah, we're starting to do. We definitely get a lot of incoming, particularly around results. We're looking at various platforms like Investor Meet Company and a few others that will enable us to engage better with the private investor community. So yeah, for sure. I think it, and as I said, I think the US is way ahead of us from this perspective. I think you look at what happened with GameStop last year and around Robinhood and everything else. And so there's a different dynamic in the US. And I think it's starting to come over here, but I think it's only just started, really.
And if you're playing sort of, I'd say, IR God for the day almost, but if you're at the Investor Relations Conference next year and had command of the audience on the stage, what would you tell people, what would your suggestions be to the sort of the attendees in terms of things that investor relations should start doing? And things that we should stop doing as an industry?
I think it's a weird industry because I think IROs are generally a sort of frenemies because generally, I'd say this, you know, it varies, of course, for you know, large caps, there are big teams, but for FTSE 250, and I've generally worked for FTSE 250 stocks, you're on your own generally, unless you might have one or two people working for you, but you're generally on your own. And if you were to go for a role, you're competing with people that you might be having a coffee with 2 days earlier. So there's kind of that frenemy role. So I think don't be afraid to collaborate and try to pick up best practice as and when you can. We talked about the Investor Relations Society earlier. It's a great way of doing it. There are some informal networks out there that I'm involved with as well. A lady called Marina Calero set up a coffee break session every Thursday for just an informal get together with a load of IROs. That sort of thing is really great for sharing best practice, collaborating, learning what's out there, what new initiatives and technologies are out there. So that's definitely needs to be more collaboration in the industry. There's no doubt about it. And it's a great way to learn and network as well. It's really important to see what's going on in the industry.
Yeah, I'd echo that. Before you go on to the stop one, I think, you know, I was fortunate to work in oil and gas where we were competing maybe for the investors' capital, but we weren't competing for opportunities. We weren't cannibalizing our customer bases. You know, we were often partnering with each other and working with each other as companies. As a result, there was a really strong community amongst the IROs within that sector. And when there were regulatory changes, I remember the strategic review coming out, for example, we'd all meet up for a beer and just sort of have a chat and say, well, what are you doing? And we'd work together to just bounce ideas off each other and help each other solve it. Because as you say, you're often the lone wolf internally, and it can be a lonely world. And you know how you do IR, but you don't necessarily know how to enhance that. You just kind of keep doing what you're doing because no one's really told you it's not the way to go about things. You don't know where you can optimize and where you can't. So I definitely agree with you there. I'd recommend anybody to take advantage of any opportunities you can to build that network and just have that ability to find people you can bounce things off safely. And it certainly was beneficial for me. And that was a really strong group. And I think we all got something out of it.
Yeah, definitely agree. And I think on the don'ts, I would say, don't stick to what you know. Get out of your comfort zone. As we were saying before, try and get involved with non-IR projects. Do things that, if you learn from best practice, do things that perhaps other companies are doing that perhaps your company hasn't been doing. Don't just do the basics. And I think there's a lot to be said for sort of innovating the way that you do IR based on what's out there, what ideas that you've heard, perhaps bringing in your own experience from other roles or other industries. So yeah, just think differently about how you go about your day-to-day, and it just makes it more interesting.
Yeah, because something I look about 15 years and it's certainly changed fundamentally. There will be subtle changes over time. But if I think about the way the jobs perform now to what it was in sort of 2006, 2007, when I moved across from financial PR to IR, it's fundamentally different, not just in terms of the rules and regulations, but the technological advancements and everything else. So I think you're right. Innovation is something we can be slow adapters at times, but obviously not a plus 500 being at the forefront of technology, but across the industry generally. And I think it's one where there's always opportunities to embrace technology and improve the way we do things. And you see that. I don't know what the biggest change you think back to when you made that leap and what's the biggest change you've seen in that time frame?
Gosh, I think I think overall that the industry is so much more professional and grown up now to when I moved back in the mid-2000s. It's still at that point probably about a 30-year track record of investor relations overall in the UK, but it was quite fragmented. People doing IR at the time were from all different sorts of backgrounds. It was a kind of job that, yes, there was potential career there, but it was a job that either companies put in people in IR for a period of time that they could learn about the industry and their company and move them out. And that still happens, of course. But today, I think it's a much more professional industry that potentially, there's great career prospects. And I think that's very, very positive.
Yeah, I think what you probably see as well, Miri, build on that and get your thoughts. The fact that I think investors now recognise that, and I think a lot of fund managers, whereas in the US, you always found that fund managers are very used to dealing with IR directly. In the UK, there was still very much, I'm only going to deal with CEO, CFO. I think if you, the professionalisation of the industry to a certain extent has probably been recognised, maybe tacitly, by the investment community. But I think a lot of fund managers are now far more comfortable dealing with an IR because they recognise they're a high quality, they're plugged in. It goes back to this point we talked about earlier a little bit about leadership, how you can demonstrate value. That's a great way, I think, of being credible so that you take those calls away from the CFO and CEO by making sure that those fund managers are happy to call you on a day-to-day basis and then catch up with the CFO for something on a major strategic basis they need to.
Completely. Yeah, completely. You can use that. You can go out there as an IR, build a story and bring in management when investors want to meet management at the right time. If it's new investors, your job really is to try and get them to educate them and get them to understand the business and the industry, etc., with the management coming in after that to follow up with their take on strategy, et cetera, and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, completely.
We touched on ESG briefly earlier. So we talked about things that have changed in the last 15 years. This is clearly an area that has evolved and developed. And I think back to when we first did this back in the day as CSR, it was, taking photographs of nice projects we were doing and that was kind of it. And we look now, then it became about sort of actually, no, we need to put the processes in because the photos are the outputs of the work you're doing. So let's get the process all sorted. And now, of course, it's moved on completely and we've got a very rigorous reporting regime around ESG. So how do you sort of manage those risks and opportunities within the business? You've got a committee that you stay involved with and who else sits on that committee and how actively does it meet and review things across the business?
Yeah, so it's maybe the other big change for ESG in that 15, 16 year period. But yeah, I mean, as you said, it's huge now. And it's, as I said before, it's one of the biggest challenges that we've got as an industry. So we're starting from scratch effectively. And I should say that obviously being a technology and people business, for us, obviously governance, social are the two big elements. Environmental is less so because, our sort of carbon footprint is relatively minimal. It's sort of office and data warehouse electricity usage and that's about it. And we do some good initiatives around recycling, et cetera. But overall, it's for us, it's about governance and the social dynamics. So we set up the ESG committee end of 2020, which I'm, as I said before, I'm involved with. We did a materiality matrix this time last year that basically mapped out the key risks and opportunities and tried to prioritize those. And then we're tracking those and reporting them on a regular basis, including what actions we're taking to kind of alleviate the risk and optimize the opportunities. Now we're a year down the line, we're looking at the various regulations and frameworks. We're trying to align ourselves with SASB in particular because of the industry focus. And it's really helpful because actually we can completely relate to it and try and measure ourselves and think about our ESG dynamics from that perspective. I think we're also fundamentally, of course, focused on what our investors want out of us in terms of our narrative and how we're reporting. TCFD is obviously coming in this year and we're reporting on that on a sort of best endeavours basis this year, including reporting our emissions data for the first time, thinking about our net zero ambitions as well. And of course, there's the ongoing dialogue with the ratings agencies. And I would say that we, particularly MSCI, Sustainalytics and ISS are the big priorities for us. We know that our shareholders, particularly on the passive side, use those particular ratings agencies. So we're focused on those. And as I said before, governance has always been high on the agenda for us from a general governance perspective, governing the business from a risk management perspective and a regulation perspective, but also thinking about remuneration, board composition. Those are big issues. I think from a social perspective, the materiality matrix effectively prioritised the fact that we want to ensure that our customers are very well protected. They know what they're getting into when they're trading with us. they know the risks, and we want to make sure that they are fully protected. We have a number of different measures from a technology perspective to make sure they're protected. And of course, you've also got employee support and welfare. So that's where we are. It's a moving feast. As I said before, everyone's got different take, everyone's got different perspective, different resources they have to be able to manage it. But I think you can just do the best you can from your own perspective. And I think fundamentally, it comes down to what investors want to see, what they want to hear from you. And you've got to get away from looking like it's a box-ticking exercise, but really fundamentally boil it down to the priorities and making sure that you're reporting on that on a very clear and regular basis.
Thanks, Rob. Look, a quick fire round to finish off with, if we may.
Oh, yeah, cool.
Sort of one or two word answers, if we can. So how big is your IR team?
Small. One person, me.
Next roadshow, online or hybrid?
Online.
How many IR conferences or webinars have you attended over the last 12 months?
10.
How has your IR budget increased, decreased, or stayed the same versus 2020 and 2021?
Roughly the same.
Are you planning a capital markets day or event?
Yes.
How many times does IR present to the board per year?
3 or 4.
And I think we've answered this one. Do you engage with retail investors outside of the AGM?
Yes.
Brilliant. Well, in that case, Rob, thanks a lot for joining me today. That's a great discussion. I hope our listeners enjoy it as much as I did. And I'd like to just ask our listeners to look out for the next episode of Enquire, the Investor Relations podcast, as we continue our conversation with senior IR professionals such as Rob Gurner. So thanks again, Rob.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.
And thank you for joining Enquire, the Investor Relations podcast. Please look out for our next episode in conversation with senior investor relations professionals in the UK.